Two sisters lived on separate sides of the states. One in NYC and the other LA. They both moved to Chicago and decided to stay. Now here's their playful podcast packed with Kid Lit Parlay.
Children's books.
Are they really that great?
Talking children's books is with Kate and Hughes 8.
Children's books.
Why, what, and how?
Hughes 8 and Kate will break it down for you now.
So Kate, I have found a phenomenon. Would you like to hear my phenomenon?
Do 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 do.
Phenomenon.
Do 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 do.
Phenomenon.
Do 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 do.
Okay, yeah, yours sounds more accurate. Yeah. How many podcasts do you listen to, would you say?
About a dozen.
Okay. Do you know what every podcaster looks like?
No.
But when you listen to their voices, do you conjure up a mental image of what you think they might look like?
Sometimes, not always.
Interesting.
I don't think in pictures like
right,
that.
You don't, yes. We have determined before that your brain is one of those brains that does not think in pictures, which is more accepting now these days than it was
yep.
when I first learned that. Where I think initially I was like, what?
Thank you.
I imagine every podcaster and I try to imagine. And then eventually, if I really like the podcaster, my curiosity gets the better of me. And then I look up what they look like and inevitably regret it. Almost every time because they don't match my picture. Not because they're ugly.
Wait.
Just because they don't match my mental image of themselves.
Do you think people are doing that to us?
That's where I'm leading with this.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yes. So if anyone asks, I look like Marlena Dietrich. And you look like...
Gene Simmons from Kiss.
Fantastic. Yes. So now you guys have a clear-cut picture of how to think of us when you imagine us in your brains, if you are the kind of person who conjures up pictures in your brains when you think of things.
Now when they see us at ALA...
Exactly. Now they'll know exactly who to look for.
Exactly.
Gene Simmons.
Yep.
And Marlena Dietrich.
It'll be hard to miss us, really.
I mean, quite frankly, we do stand out. Speaking of standing out, this podcast stands out because it's so good. And what is the name of this podcast? That was a transition, thank you very much. And I'm proud of it. I'm proud of that transition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's the name of it?
Using Kate.
Thank you. Who are you?
Kate.
Thank you. I'm Betsy. Fuse Kate and Kate. Fine.
Fuse Kate and Kate. I like that.
I rescind that one immediately.
Yeah, no, that's I like
terrible.
That one.
That's a terrible name.
Fuse Kate and Kate.
Someone's going to now draw that, and I will be so disappointed.
And I'll be thrilled.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is a podcast where we talk about, in spite of everything you have heard thus far, picture books.
Children's picture books.
Yes, opposed to all those adult picture books.
There are adult picture books.
That's true. Bill Watterson, who does Calvin and Hobbes, put out a picture book recently for adults. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Recently, I mean like in October. But still, relatively recently. Yes. No, these are picture books for children, and we determine if they're good or not. That's what we do. I'm going to kick things off with a letter.
Oh.
A letter today, because this letter pertains to the book that we're doing.
Okay.
It is from Rochelle. She says, "Hi, I'm writing on behalf of my daughter, Sarah. We were just listening to your last episode. After she danced along with your theme song,"
aww,
I love that so much, "she had a book suggestion that involved crime and murder. We ran to get the book off the shelf, and it was published in 2004, so it qualifies."
Ooh.
"Funny story about this book, my former principal was talking to me about this horrible story that a librarian candidate read to a class that involved violence and murder and a cookie. I assume it was this book. I agree with her that it probably wasn't the best interview lesson and decided to leave my copy at home. We love your podcast."
Aww.
So this, yes, I did check. There is no blood. I am sorry. But you got your fill of blood, I would say, from King Stork.
With the decapitated
head. So I think you can't cry too badly about that.
You also had me at cookie, so.
Oh, yeah. No, there is crime, murder, and a cookie.
I love it.
And violence.
That's all right. I need.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go.
Ginger Bear.
By?
Minnie Gray.
That's right. Now, technically, it's the winner of the 2004 Smarties Prize Gold Award. Ooh, the Smarties Prize. Why have you never heard of it? Because it's British. This is a British book. Now, technically, if we're going to get into semantics, it came out in 2004 in England. It came out in America a couple years later. We're going with the British publication date for this particular one. So technically, in terms of the book itself's age, it is 20 years old.
Okay.
Okay. Go read them.
Okay.
While Kate does her read, let's learn more about Minnie Gray, which is impossible because Minnie Gray doesn't have an About Minnie Gray section on her website. Now, I can't actually blame her for this. I don't have a website right now because mine got stolen from me. That's fun. That's another story. But in any case, I can't blame people when their websites aren't up to date. However, you are supposed to at least have a small biographical section on there. This does not exist for Minnie Gray. Now, Minnie Gray has done many delightful picture books over the years, including Traction Man Is Here, and, of course, the book we are doing today. In this particular case, we can say that she lives in Oxford, which means she could potentially be hanging out with Lisa Brown, who's stationed there right now. Two illustrators having fun together. That's what I want to think about. She did her most recent book. Now, there was a big gap there for a while, but she did do one in 2022 in England called The Greatest Show on Earth, which, as far as I can tell, might even be nonfiction-ish. Did it come here to America? It did not. It did not come here to America. So that's a failure of America. Beyond that, she hasn't produced much recently, which makes me kind of sad because she does amazing books when she does. However, I can give you at least one concrete piece of information about her that I garnered from her interview with Jules Danielson on 7 Impossible Things Before Breakfast, in which she says, "My pet is a cat called Bonzetta, who is a stripeless tabby, loves butter, and helps sing my son Herbie to sleep every night." So there you go. What else you need to know?
C is for cookie. That's good enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
C is for cookie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cookie, cookie, cookie starts with C.
Yeah, except this is called Ginger Bear, so there's no C.
Ginger, ginger, ginger starts with G.
G, yeah.
Exactly. Also, I suspect this has been Americanized. There's no way the word cookie appears in the British edition of this. I don't know this for a fact, but wouldn't he be a biscuit?
I don't know if there's a difference between a cookie and a biscuit.
I don't know either, actually. I know that what they call biscuits, we would call cookies, but that does not mean they don't have their own cookies.
Right.
They may. It could be that if you do a homemade bear made out of ginger bread, perhaps he is a cookie.
I don't know.
Brits, tell us where we're wrong.
More confused as to why on the title page they're looking at a storefront, and the name of the storefront is The Golden Bun. And the name of the store is on this storefront 3 different places.
Really? Are they just opening it? Are they trying to make a big deal of it?
I don't know. It's above the storefront window.
Yeah.
It's above the door, and it's on the door. It seems a little overkill.
Maybe they're brand new, and they're trying to make a name for themselves 3 different ways.
Well, we meet the story of Horace and his mum, which is...
Wait, is this another Horace? Didn't we just have a Horace?
Horace was
a very popular name once. Yeah.
It's the 2024 name of the year. Name your child Horace.
My son Horace.
Yeah.
I could have had a Horace bird.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound bad at all.
Well, we meet Horace and his mum, which
mom.
You wouldn't have had to tell me this was British. I could have seen it
change that one, so yeah, they're not trying to hide he's British.
And Horace's mum likes to give him a lump of pastry that he usually will roll all over the floor and the furniture, and you see him put the pastry dough on his head and drop it on the floor and then eat it and then wrestle the dog with it and then put it on the toilet.
This may be the most disgusting sequence in any picture book I have ever encountered.
I've never almost vomited looking at pictures until now.
Yeah, I have seen so many poop books, like poop picture books.
No,
they don't hold a candle.
The dough on the toilet, and then it's all gray and covered in dog
it's
hair.
It's on his hands, and yeah, I actually felt physically ill looking at that.
Yep.
I'm like, wow.
It says, until it was deep gray and fluffy. And quite a lot smaller.
But this would be a good thing for people if we ever want to have a contest on who has the most disgusting sequence I'm happy to say it goes to a woman. Yeah, take that, sure. Dudes who think you're so gross. Ginger Bear wipes the floor with you.
I would be curious to see the most disgusting illustrations in a children's picture book.
Oh, I think we should have an award for them. Honestly.
I mean, yeah. Number one, Ginger Bear.
Ginger Bear wins.
Congratulations.
Every year he goes to Ginger Bear. Well done, Ginger Bear. You are so gross.
But today, Horace's mom gives him a cookie cutter in the shape of a bear, and he stamps it out in nice, clean dough.
Yeah, I was so relieved that it wasn't the dough that we saw that was gray and fuzzy.
Yeah. No, this is good dough.
She didn't let him have this one.
And then he puts in currant eyes and a nose, and I had to look up what currants were.
They're like teeny, they're kind of like raisins, but they're like not
raisins. They are fruit.
They're fruit. Yeah, they're teeny tiny dried fruit.
Yeah. And then Horace's mum, she put it in the oven, and then, you know, 20 minutes later, he wants to eat it, but he has to wait for it to cool down. And then once it's cooled down, he wants to eat it, but then he's going to spoil his dinner, so then he has to wait. So then he's getting ready to eat it again, but then Horace's mom says, you just cleaned your teeth.
Not brush them.
Nope. Them. And on the right-hand side of the page is a 7-step illustration of how to brush your teeth. And I don't think anyone starts brushing their teeth like number one indicates, which is it is the front part of the top row of your teeth, focusing on the top two front teeth in an upwards and back motion.
What, like you're brushing your hair, but it's your teeth upwards and back? Like, that, oh, this is the only way to brush.
And then step number two is the front two teeth, but going down.
This is written by a mad woman.
And then step number three is the back of the two teeth.
No, no, I don't even care. Now I'm just perturbed.
So,
by the way, I'm noticing from this distance, I hadn't noticed this before, he doesn't look that different from David in the David books. Like, he practically has a triangle nose and the same round head and the lack of hair. I think this is just a British David.
Hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, since he brushed his teeth and he can't eat the cookie, he puts the cookie in a tin next to his pillow and drifts off to sleep, where there is a collage of sheep over his head.
Ginger sheep.
Now, I don't know which I like more, the sheep, that the collage that's going over his head, or his blanket. Ooh. That has collaged pictures of different cookies.
Oh, that's very nice. Those look like biscuits, more like the biscuits that I'm familiar with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Biscuits, cookies.
Cookies, biscuits, whatever. Biscuits, cookies, whatever.
So, in the middle of the night, the cookie comes to life.
Like you do.
And yawns and stretches and decides he wants to play with somebody, but everyone's asleep. So the Ginger Bear says, I shall make some friends, and he went into the kitchen. Now, he is standing on a pile of books. One of the books has a recipe sticking out of it, but he decides to only use the first three ingredients that he can see of that recipe, which include butter, flour, and milk.
Okay. Well, that's most
eggs.
Eggs, well, if you want it to rise.
Flavors, like, I don't know, ginger or
the flavors
salt
well,
or
yeah.
baking soda.
I'm just saying, if you want the most basic
baking powder,
cookie, the most basic cookie, you could make something out of those three ingredients. I'm not saying it'd be good. I'm just saying you could do it. You can make a dough out of that.
It's gross. Well, the bear makes a dough.
I mean, nobody's going to be eating these.
So. Puts his first batch of friends in the oven. And then
it just sounds terrible when you say it that way.
Once they've come out and they've cooled, then he dresses them in icing of many colors. And it even says those little silver balls. And man, I freaking love those silver balls that
they
you almost break your teeth
yeah,
on.
Yeah, what were they called? They were called, they have a name. Oh.
Wait. Do you hear that? It's the sound of our mother screaming. Oh.
It's something like, it's not a BG.
I just want to bask in this a little longer.
I'm gonna say the name wrong for a while.
Okay.
Is it a BG? Is it a squeegee? Is it a bougie? It's a CG.
Anyway,
well, we may never know, folks, what they're called. But yeah.
And this is why we're siblings.
Durgies? I'm getting closer. Duries?
So anyway, he makes all these cookies and...
Drogies?
And we're moving on.
Sorry, I'm just so close.
And now he says, we're new friends, let the fun begin. And he's iced all these different cookies in different styles. He even put like a cupcake liner
that's
as a skirt around
that's
one of them.
Cool. Yeah.
I'm a little concerned about this one that's holding a match, though. But then you turn the page and you realize...
Some cookies just want to see the
world burn. Oh, no. He's a fire eater. Because all of these cookies have... It's Ginger Bear's circus performing for one night only in this kitchen.
Literally
which...
one night. Glad they were all on board with this plan.
Well, yeah. Well, instead of being concerned about the one with the match, I'm now concerned about the one that's blindfolded holding a steak
with
knife.
With a knife. Yes.
I mean, I wanted...
You would think that that one would be more important with what happens next in the story.
I wanted carnage. I'm getting carnage.
You're getting it. Yeah, because that ketchup sure looks red and bloody, but yeah.
Well, then they're doing their circus for themselves, I guess.
And they have fire and sharp weapons, and yet none of this helps them.
No, yeah. No, because they don't notice there's a shadow looming in the doorway of the dog.
The dog.
Bongo the dog liked cookies, and our Ginger Bear main character, he says, screw you guys.
I know. It's like he kicks the ladder away from him practically as he leaps onto the counter.
Yeah, there is one place for safety, which is on top of the counter.
He doesn't try to help anyone
and
else.
And he has pushed the chair.
I am your god, and now your god has abandoned you.
Yes.
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 Your creator is gone.
And then you turn the page, and it's just...
that's carnage.
Full carnage. There are just crumbs everywhere. Some of the pieces of the cookie, it's just like a sad mouth.
Oh, man.
You can see the
their staring eyes, like, why? Why did you abandon us?
Yep.
The dog, why?
And it says he looks sadly at the mess. Which, again, there's more Golden Bum, like, advertising throughout this book. I haven't pointed it all out, but it is constantly
showing up. Have we tried to figure
out
if there actually is a Golden Bun? Because at this point, I'm beginning to wonder if it's a real place.
There's the Golden House in the UK.
No.
But I don't see a Golden Bun.
All right.
But it's just weird that it's constantly being advertised in this book when it's not even the title of the book.
Well, maybe it's being mentioned here because it's going to come into play later, and you need to know why Ginger Bear ends up there. And here's the evidence that he has a location to go to. I would think that's why it's there here anyway.
Okay. Well, he needs to find a place where he can be safe. But meanwhile, Horace wakes up in the morning. He doesn't see the cookie in the little tin next to his head. But can we just take a moment to talk about his mom's morning robe and matching slippers? I have no notes. They are perfection.
Yeah, I have to agree. It does, from this distance, look like she has the plague. The green, somewhat germ-like pustules.
It's just the pattern.
I know, but from here, they look a little pokey.
Don't look from far away. And then you can see the guilty dog next to
the
mom.
Yeah, the dog does look guilty. I give extra points for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we go back to the cookie who is living a great life somewhere safe, which happens to be the display window. Which is doing like a wintry scene. Now some of it's in cardboard covered in icing and some of it's plaster, but none of it can be eaten, so he's safe. But then it says, and I don't understand this.
Okay, I had this problem as well.
The display changes through the year, but every day Ginger Bear is the star. And every night, who knows? The end.
Yeah, I was really baffled. I thought there was going to be a twist when I turned the page and I read that. It was like, and every night, who knows, turn the page, and it's the publication page with a picture of
Every night he's not sure if he'll be alive.
I mean, that's what it sounds like.
Because if you look at it...
If it's a philosophical
the
thing...
The dog is looking at him.
Sure, but the dog can't get past the glass.
But the dog can get in the kitchen.
But that's not the kitchen, that's the Golden Bun.
Right.
Well, I guess.
It's all, which has the kitchen. Yeah. So I think the dog can see you. You're not going to last multiple nights. I think this is your last
night. What is the last image on the final page? What is that picture there?
It's Golden Bear who's decorating some cupcakes and he's wearing an apron.
I guess that's what he does at night. Is that the implication? Because it looks dark. I guess it's,
or is it the display change?
Yeah,
he's like there again. I don't know.
I don't
it's very.
Think we nailed
it's weird.
The landing on
no,
this one.
No.
I think it has many things to recommend it, but the ending's a bit wonky.
Yep.
Yeah. Ratings time.
Well, I love the weird illustrations, except for that really gross gray dough in the beginning. I was getting kind of Stinky Cheese Man vibes.
I was getting...
But British.
Yes. And I was getting Arnie the Donut vibes.
Yeah.
Because Arnie also does not want to be eaten and escapes and all those things. So, yeah.
I don't get why the name of the shop was pushed so much throughout the book when it wasn't even the title, but I love the creativity of the different cookies that were made, like the breather or the knife thrower.
Yeah.
I'm a little disappointed Ginger Bear didn't even bother to help rescue one of the cookies before it was eaten by the dog.
The only way that would work is if he rescued a cookie and then they got married and had little bears.
Cookies.
That's where that would go. Little bearlets.
Well, it's a fun book, but I wish it hadn't have ended on that question because it doesn't make sense to me.
Right.
I think I like the illustrations more than I like the writing, but I love the cookie carnage, and now I'm super hungry, so I gave it a 6.75.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good. Yeah, it's the problem is, of course, we're only supposed to judge the book in front of us, not other books by this creator. The fact of the matter is I like other Minnie Gray books better than this one. I did read this one back in the day. Liked it fine. Did not remember it particularly, but I have remembered other Minnie Grays far better. But we are not talking about other books by Minnie Gray. We were talking about this book by Minnie Gray. I think it's good. I agree with you that the writing is not quite on the same level as the art. I think her art is extraordinary. I think if you want Cookie Carnage, this is the ultimate Cookie Carnage book.
Yep.
For the full-on destruction of an entire civilization, essentially.
It's just a circus.
Yeah, but they were the only ones, and now they're dead. So, yeah, I'm very impressed by that. I agree with you. Doesn't stick the landing. And it's very hard to stick the landing on a picture book. 100%. Very, very difficult.
Here, I'll give you a hint. Don't end with a question.
Or if you do, make it philosophical and then answer it with a picture at the end. Like, you can do a question if you turn the page and then the answer to that question's on the final page. But that was not what was being done here.
Nope.
It was more to serve like a... So, in honor of the... I am giving it a mere 5.
Oh, well, with our scores combined, it's over 5, so it's a classic.
It's a toe-over-the-line classic. All right. Letters time.
Ooh.
This comes from Nick Brule. We're just going to keep reading letters from the people. I'm Minnie Gray. I am expecting you to write in after this episode.
If we review Dr. Seuss, you better get on it.
Yeah, because, Dr. Seuss, get out of that grave and write us a letter, sir.
Yeah, if we review your
in
book.
In rhyme, if you can. Oh, some joker's gonna do it. Okay, anyway, this is from Nick Brule, who wrote Bad Kitty, which we did a couple weeks ago, and he says, "Hi, Betsy and Kate.
Hello.
As you predicted, I can't help myself, and I'm going to respond. To begin, thank you. I thought / hoped that you might cover Bad Kitty next year when she actually does turn 20, but your jumping in early is a nice treat. Also thrilled that you designated the book a classic. To address your few criticisms, I agree with all of them. First, I shouldn't have made rhubarb the U vegetable, and I shouldn't have made squash the Q. Google was still in its infancy 22 years ago when I wrote this book, and I simply couldn't find an appropriate veggie or theme for those letters. Given the chance to go back in time and correct this, I would use quince and maybe ugly fruit."
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good. "By the way, can I point out something that very, very few people ever notice? For all of Kitty's utterances during the first and third alphabets, I highlight the vowel, including Y. Almost no one has ever seen this, so that's probably my shortcoming in not making it more obvious. As for not using all caps for good, remember you mostly, well done in pointing this out. This makes me wince every time I read this book out loud to a group of kids. This was only my second book, and back in the day I was simply not as forceful in pointing out the errors to my publisher's designer. I did, in fact, point this out to her a couple of times when she showed me proofs, but the corrections were never made and I simply didn't push hard enough. I regret it."
Aww.
"Shigua is Mandarin, so it should be pronounced Shigua." All right.
There we go.
"There actually is consistency with that tooth. It appears when Kitty is being bad or about to be bad, as with the first alphabet, but not when she is being good. I would do this one other time for Poor Puppy, which is its sequel. but I'll confess that I probably wasn't as consistent as I should have been with every illustration. Still, you don't see that tooth at all during the last two alphabets, but then it reappears on the very last page. That's how we know that Kitty is about to be bad again. For the TV show, stay tuned. Oh. And then I responded and I said, oh, I'm sorry, I said Shiguel wrong.
I did too. I butchered it.
And then he responded to me for that. And he said, anytime and thank you again. Please don't think I'm correcting you. I completely agree with every flaw you guys noticed. When Macmillan hired Vanessa Williams to make an audio read aloud of the book, she decided to give Shigua a Hispanic pronunciation and pronounced it Higua. Either no one at Macmillan had any idea how it should be pronounced or simply chose not to correct her.
Wow.
So there you go. That's on you, Vanessa Williams.
Wow.
Yeah. Grown-up things we like.
You go first.
Oh, I got a good one. So there is a new Netflix show. It's called Ripley.
It has my boyfriend
on it. It has your boyfriend on it, Mr. Andrew Scott. Formerly Moriarty and the Hot Priest on Fleabag. And we know from Moriarty that when he is being villainous, he can go big.
Yes.
But in this, he is going way, 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 way subtle. Real low-key. This may be the most beautifully shot black and white TV show I've ever seen. The cinematography, just folks, watch the first episode. That's all you have to do. Just watch the first episode and just look at the shots in this. He starts out in New York and then he goes to Italy, but the New York, I know we're supposed to be thinking, oh, what a grimy place to live, but it's so beautifully made, and it's, you know, set in the past and the early 60s.
I watched an interview where he said he was stressing out so much having to learn Italian.
Oh, I bet he was.
He's Irish, so.
Yes, he is. And but I think he's playing American in this, and he's got a perfect American accent. You'd never know. But with the black and white, his eyes become these, like, and they said this on Pop Culture Happy Hour, he gets these shark's eyes.
Yes.
Just like these depthless.
That's what Moriarty.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And he's amazing. It's amazing. It's very different from the movie The Talented Mr. Ripley with Matt Damon, which I had never read the book, so I didn't realize how much they added to that movie. They're not adding all that stuff to make him more likable in the TV show. So, yeah.
Well, you started this episode by mentioning podcasts and
I did.
And what people look like. And
yeah.
While I have no idea what this guy looks like, I've been listening to a new podcast called Murder 101.
Okay.
It's about this sociology high school teacher who challenges his class to help solve a cold case, which then turns into 6 cold cases. And while they're not given the credit they deserve, they actually help put together a profile that identifies not only the serial killer.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but some of the Jane Does as well, which is amazing because they're from the 80s.
Okay, this is how horror novels begin. And then the serial killer figures out what they're up to and begins picking off the students one by one.
He's dead, so.
Oh, thank God. Oh, thank God.
But these teens took the time to find similarities between the victims. They put together a profile on the killer.
Wow.
They tie things together that the police didn't do because it takes time.
Yeah.
And students, they have class.
They've got a lot of
time. They need homework. They have time. There's even a woman who actually got away, and they interview her. It's fascinating.
Huh.
So if you want something in the realm of true crime, check out the podcast Murder 101.
That sounds very good and terrifying. We've had a lot of murder today. My goodness. Murder, people murder.
Maybe next week we should... Well, actually, next week is your birthday, so...
It is my birthday. I'm not doing anything for it. I already have the book picked out, and it's going to be one that LeVar Burton recently promoted on a podcast, which I had never read before, but he talked it up so well. He was on the podcast The Sporkful.
So you're saying it's a classic before we...
Oh, no, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying LeVar Burton thinks it's a classic. That does not mean that we think it's a classic.
Okay.
Oh, no, by no means. Just because we love LeVar... doesn't mean he's right about everything.
Okay, well, we'll
see,
I guess.
So we're going to see if he's correct or not.
Okay.
Yeah, but you don't have to take my word for it.
Okay, all right.
Butterfly in the sky. I can fly. All right, and until we determine whether or not LeVar Burton has taste, I've been Betsy.
I'm Kate.
Bye. Fuse 8 and Kate is a Fuse No. 8 production. You can reach us at fusekate8@gmail.com. You can follow our podcast on Twitter at @fuse_kate. You can follow us on Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at @fuse8kate. That's @fuse8kate. Listen to us on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Audible, Amazon Music, or Player FM. Or follow us on iTunes and rate our podcast if you're so inclined. Our music is by Haddon Keim. Our logo is by Andrea Cerumi. And our ginger Drew is Drew Atienza. Fuse 8 and Kate is a creation of Kate Atienza and Betsy Bird.
They're called...
No, don't tell me, because I'm so close. Okay. I think it's like draggies or drogies, or it's drag is in there, and then there's like an ease or something at the end. So I'm going to say it's draggies.
Except there's an accent mark.
There's an accent mark, so maybe it's draggies or
draggies.
Is that what?
I don't know.
Maybe, I don't know. Draggies.
Draggies.